Well, she'll get me in disgust, though. I did genuinely think about putting last week's drop back in there just because, you know, it's Groundhog Day and that's how this works. But, you know, I've elected not to. Brinson, O'Brien, Zoe Carr, welcome to both of you again for round two of Groundhog Day.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Great that you're both here. As always, if you can like, share, rate, review, retweet, all the fun stuff that goes along with growing the podcast for us, that would be fantastic. Haven't asked for a review for a while, so feel free to do that. You can obviously leave comments on Spotify if you're listening to it on Spotify as well. It'll just be another medium I don't check. But if you want to leave comments in there and I happen to be going through on the right day, we may well reply to it and we'll see how we go with that. We are back for round two of Groundhog Day. So last week you would have heard all the things we feel like we keep going over continually and just hasn't had any traction in movement. We're going to try and solve some problems as we go through all of this. Can't guarantee that, but this might just be an extended version of Rob's rants as we go through this entire podcast. You're welcome if that's the case. You know, nothing funnier than when I'm angry about stuff. But we'll jump straight into this. One of the ones, because I feel like this is going to take up the most amount of time, and I look at Zoe just like eagerly awaiting this topic in particular. Players not using their non-preferred hand when they should be using their non-preferred hand. Off you go, Zoe. Oh.
I know that we're like at a stage of or an iteration, I guess, of the game where there needs to be adaptive finishing. It's not the old school, you know, left, right, left-hand layup, you know, that sort of thing at times. But we've gone too far the other way. And now kids are missing easy shots, easy layups, easy finishes by shooting with their preferred hand on the non-preferred side because of, to me, it seems like angles. The angles end up just completely wrong. They end up jammed under under the rim, or they're coming back into the defense. So now they're a semi-contested shot is completely contested. You know, it's almost like but if I shoot it with my preferred hand, it'll be easier. It's actually not the case, and I think it's something that as coaches we need to really hold accountable because it's not going to change otherwise. And pretty cool. Actually, I got a story time. Early story time. I wasn't there, but I saw this on video. We had an athlete in the under-16s at Nationals just gone and is an absolute like right hand on the left hand side all the time, and she starts to get a bit annoyed at us at practice because she's constantly reminded, and she's making some really good changes. Rob was managing my group at Nationals and went to their practice and, you know, reminded this athlete that she was to shoot with her left hand. She gets to it annoyed her. And so she got to the game.
That's just the effect I have on people. Had nothing to do with the coaching.
Yeah.
Like
yeah, that was just your presence. Yeah. But she got into the game and she made a layup with her left hand on the left-hand side and then ran past Rob and like shook her left hand in front of Rob, like, have a look at me. And the best part about it was like she was being a bit of a smarty pants. But Rob actually quite enjoyed it.
Brinton was sitting next to me at the time. Yeah. And Brinton's like, was that at you? I'm like, yeah, it was. And I kind of respect it.
Yeah. Yeah. I was actually impressed too myself, to be honest, that she did that. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I like that too. Yeah. So it's great.
Credit to
but all. You know, whatever gets it done.
Yeah, like. Absolutely. If you need to progress your skill development in spite of me, I'm all for it. Like, that's fine.
Yeah.
Like,
I'll take the dirty drive. Yeah, like, it's fine. Like,
yeah. But, it is a thing though. Like, it is a genuine, like, does it happen as much on the boys' side, Brinton? Like, do you see it over there as well?
I think it happens probably more from what I've seen. Like, yeah, okay. I think the I'm more athletic than you and stronger means I can just go wherever I want to go is something that we see a lot of, and it's definitely a major issue for us, especially when you see people go to the next level. Like, I know when I was lucky enough to go to Oceania's and I saw an athlete that we had in our Country Vic program who was able to bully people and get to the rim, and then when he went there, it was like, I can't go with my right hand against this New Zealand team.
Yep.
I have to be able to finish with both my hands and I have to be able to do different things. Was something like you see now when he went to 17 Worlds, he was a completely different player when he did that. So, no, I think it is something need to address more, and I think we do a poor job of actually making athletes do it in our practice sessions. Like, yeah, we worry about the things that don't matter, like can we run a system, can we do this, can we do that, instead of how do we help the players get better so we can do that.
I think it also goes into, we get outcome focus. So yep, if it goes in, we're like, oh cool, and we just let it go, instead of, no, I'd like, we've got to get to a point where I would rather you miss shooting that with your non-preferred hand than make it shooting it with your preferred hand. And it might cost you some games, and I know that's hard, but, you know, it's, again, for the betterment of the athlete, so they can be more adaptable once they, you know, progress and start to – especially the biggest ones that I fear for are the early developers. Yep. Those ones are the ones that they can get away with it now. I mean, we've sat in stands before, Brenton, and been like, oh, they're not going to get away with that in 2 years' time.
Yep.
You know, and so it's – on us as coaches to make sure we're setting those frameworks to make sure and allowing them in games to potentially miss or, you know, might cost us a game. But the idea is right. You know, the process is right. That's what we're more focused on.
Yep. And it's one of those things too, because there's a few different layers to this, because we're talking primarily finishing at the moment. Like it tends to be using your right hand on the left-hand side. But there's other elements to this as well, of course, passing and dribbling.
Mm.
Like it's so many kids just run to the right-hand sideline because they are right-hand dominant and they feel like that's where the safety is, or they're a little bit more comfortable on the right-hand side so they feel like they can go quicker. So I'll just keep going quicker over onto that side. It's like, yeah, but you're just in the same spot. Like this is a bad thing. We spoke about it last week. Stay off the sidelines. Like if you have the ability, most teams will not defend you toes to baseline in the backcourt. Like most of them will shade you one way or the other. So the ability to sit there and attack a high foot and say, well, actually, I'm just going to go past you the other way and force you to drop step and open up, it's actually a really good thing if you can have that. But it is that comfortability, I suppose. And that's where it sort of it brings me back. The finishing under the basket, like I'll use that as the prime example. I'm all for kids have to figure out a way of doing things themselves. I'm all for letting them self-discover, and I'm all for that. At some point in time, we have to intervene as coaches. And it's like we can't sit here and just watch them continue to do it incorrectly, because we're doing a disservice to the player where we're just going to allow them to get to under 18s, never have been corrected when they've needed to have been corrected, and now their future isn't really in the sport anymore. And this goes all the way back to under 12s. There is nothing wrong with preempting that when you see a kid coming in for a layup and when they're in their steps, left hand.
Yeah.
And just put the thought in their mind straight away. Now, they'll probably still shoot it with their right hand, but the thought is now at least embedded in that, what do I actually need to be doing in this point in time to be able to do it correctly, rather than I'm just going to keep doing what I've always done because that's easier and I need the 2 points. And I will happily champion anyone that misses a shot using their non-preferred hand.
That's when the that's important the one. Part, that's the big right? thing. Like especially like
jump on that.
Young girls in particular,
yep.
because they want –
what's a strength thing they too
want
for to, them?
Yeah, they want to comply, and they want to make the coach happy, and making buckets makes coaches happy. Yep. But we've got to change that narrative to, you know, being fundamentally sound makes us happy, and trying things outside of your comfort zone makes us happy, and you know, so then they get that, and then when they finally do make one, like. Lose it.
Oh, it's the
be
happiest.
So excited. Yeah, yeah. Like, you know.
Give me that before a championship, yeah. to be honest.
But make a bit of an idiot of yourself if you have to. Like, really show that athlete just how much them, the work that they've put in and the bravery that they've shown, how great that is. So they continue to do it.
Yep. The footwork thing, I reckon, has a bit to do with it.
Oh, yeah. That's like, something I was just thinking about, Rob.
Yeah, like if you do have like the under 12 kids where they do lack the physical strength to be able to shoot it with their non-dominant hand.
Just I don't agree with that now, though.
Yeah, stick with me.
Okay.
Just
I'm pointing my whiteboard marker
yeah,
at
I know.
You.
I felt a little attacked, to be honest. But like just have them play off 2 feet.
Yep.
Like straight away now they've got a wider base, they've got more power coming up through the legs to be able to make that shot. I think that will actually help them use their non-dominant hand now. Mm. Now, are they actually capable of it? Yes, they just don't realise it. Yeah. Like that's one of the things.
Especially you need with the size 5.
Yeah, you need to prove to them that they can do this before they'll believe that you can do this.
Yep.
But I think having players play off 2 feet actually really helps using the non-dominant hand. Like,
yeah.
Do you see that in the boys? Like, I know we talk about like athletically they can kind of get away with a little bit more, But do you find playing off two does actually enable them to use their opposite hand?
Yes, playing off two does, and then it's teaching them to pivot on both feet. Like, that's the thing that I notice the most is, like, they're so much more comfortable pivoting on one foot, which usually goes to their right hand or their strong hand, and it's just putting them in situations where they need to get comfortable pivoting on whatever their non-dominant foot is and being able to play off that foot, because that actually puts them in that position to play with their weak hand. And that's something, even with passing, is a massive thing. I see a kid come to a two-foot stop, and it's like, I'm going to pivot on this foot because I know I can get to my right hand. Yep. But no, we've got to learn how to pivot on both sides. We've got to be able to play off a stride stop both ways. And it's just giving them, like, the tools to be able to do it, and then they'll be able to make the decision, because too many times I think they're forced into using their right hand because that's all they know what to do.
Yep. I completely agree with that. And I think the passing one is really relevant, because the amount of kids that will pass across their body with their dominant hand, like, they'll pass to their left with their right hand, and it's like, well, you've brought it back to where the defense is standing there. That makes it harder. And to be honest, like, I know trial season is coming up. That's one of the easiest ways to almost have a line put through. If you can't pass with both sides of your body, that's going to be really difficult to play at any level within the sport.
Yeah,
like when we're talking to the representative level and obviously the BV performance programs.
When you look at the highest levels, like, the only way you can really stop people at a international level is forcing them one way. Like, they're that good of players, and the ones that are really hard to guard can go both ways.
Yep.
So I think it's having the end in mind. What are we trying to get them to be is, like, can they play on both sides of their body with their feet, their hands? Like, where do I have the ball? I think that's the other thing. We play in the center too much. We play in, like, that strike zone too much, and not teaching them. I just keep going back to it. They're comfortable putting it to their ear on their right side, but they're not comfortable going on their left side. So it's teaching them hand placement, things like that, on both sides of their body too.
Yep. And I'd love to sit here and say this will be a quick fix. This has been a problem since the dawn of basketball. Like, it's,
and will continue to be.
Well, absolutely, like, will continue to be. There's no quick fix to this.
Well, there's no quick fix, but there's also, name me a coach that has their kids enough to be able to
reinforce,
know, put
and
it. Yeah, yeah. Like, the COE, the NBL, the WNBL. Like, to be honest, it's
daily. It has to be daily.
And there's still outliers on this. Like, there's people. Like, you look at LeBron James. Like, he's a freak athlete. Mm. He gets you on his left hip. He's not going back to his left hand no matter what. He doesn't have to. Like, there's outliers, but it's, like, just not allowing that to keep happening is the most important thing, I think. Like, if you have a kid who can do that all the time, you still got to challenge them to do that. But, like, it's how do you get them to enjoy working on that too?
Yeah.
So instead of it being, like, I had an athlete when I was at Maribyrnong, still remember, could not use his left hand. All we would do every lunchtime is left hand finishes with a bump bag, and we'd work on it and work on it. And when we took him to 18 Nationals, I think he shot 15% better on his left hand. But it took us a year and a half to get that right. Yep. Like, it's not a quick fix at all.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I still remember Zoe screaming at the TV when she was watching a WNBL final once. It's like, just send her to her right-hand side. She can't make a layup on the right-hand side. It's been like this since I used to play against her. How have you not figured this out by now? It happens everywhere. Like, there are people that are certainly more confident. Like, you remember it happening.
I just didn't think it would be shared.
I know there's a point guard I've watched in the WNBL that goes right all the time, but for some reason they've named awards after her for being a passer. Played for Bendigo.
Oh.
There you go.
She's elite at getting to her right hand and making every decision in the world. But guess what? She can pivot on both feet.
Yep.
That's what I've noticed with that. Like, she's found a way around it. So sometimes there are things that are going to limit that.
Mm.
But your ability to adapt and be like, still, she can pivot on both sides of her body.
There's a difference between not needing to use one side of your body and not being able to use one side of your body.
This player here is elite, and I love watching her play. She's so good at basketball. It's not funny.
Yep. But that's, I think, the challenge. And as much as it's boring and it's monotonous for us as coaches to go through that, the only way I think it really moves the needle, I think, for the players, is it has to be called out and it has to be enforced.
Agreed.
Like, that's the only thing. We can't just sit there and go, oh, well, that's what happens. I get that in games, they'll probably just do what they do anyway. There's nothing we can really do about it. Like, if they're out on the break on the left-hand side and they use their right hand, they're just going to use their right hand. We can try and do it as much as we want, but we do have to reinforce what should have happened. How would you do that differently in the future? Why wouldn't you do that now? Okay, because it's a lack of confidence or a lack of touch. Well, okay, there's only one way to get better at that, and that is to go and put some practice in. So we have to keep having that conversation with our players. It can't just be they're just not going to do it. Because to be perfectly honest, the ones that are probably the most guilty are the right-handers going left. The left-handers going right, I actually find tends to happen because I think most of our drills start on the right-hand side. So the left-hander gets at least some reps in what they're supposed to be doing in the first place. Like they're fine. But it is usually the right-handers and an inability to go left, I think, that is the bigger problem in that one. All right, moving on to the next one. Walking to the score bench without any
hustle.
Similar with getting subbed off the court and just walking off the court. It infuriates me. Like it really annoys me. Like the sub's been called. You might be disappointed that you're getting subbed out. I understand that, but get off the court quicker so the game can start quicker and you can probably get subbed in quicker. Like, don't drag the chain. We need to get them off the floor quickly. Similarly, players going to the score bench to get subbed in, sprint. Not usually, that's a really unfair statement. Frequently, there has been someone pick up a foul that needs to get off the court quickly and you need to get the sub in before the game can restart. If you walk up there, that sub doesn't get called, particularly with some of the score benches you deal with that aren't real quick on hitting the buzzer on that or give you the
parents.
Whole... Well, no, I'm not just saying them.
I'm saying
Well, some are parents, yes.
Some are parents.
Some are professional score benches as well that aren't overly quick or they're very particular about the coach cannot call the sub, the player has to call the sub, in which case will not hit the button. So in other words, player, get there quicker.
Yeah.
It is a pet peeve of mine and it's something I feel like I talk to every team about. And I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's they've been caught unawares and they didn't expect to be getting subbed in. So there's, I've got to try and get myself together to get up there. But I find myself always looking at that. And it's a body language thing that I think as well is that when you get subbed off, I want you to run off the court. Like that is a good thing for your team to make sure that you meet the player as they're coming on, not they have to walk on and, you know, you go all the way around the court or something like that. Like that just infuriates me. But for mine, it's get to the bench quickly, get off the court quickly. Like, do you see that happening? Like, is that more of a junior thing or a senior thing, Brenton, that you've seen, or is it kind of universal?
If you want to make a coach see you, like I've talked to college coaches before and I'm like, what do you look at? They actually look at that. They look at like what they're off when they're off the court and how they get on off the court. Like how they react to that is really important. And I think for junior athletes, it shows you that you care. You want to set a really good like standard and you want someone to like a first impression to be really good at a trial or like at a tournament. I'd be the first person sprinting off the court and sprinting up to sub because there's nothing worse, like you said. Like I've had games where that's happened, where someone hasn't sprinted to the bench and then someone's got another foul and I'm trying not to crash out on the sideline. So I think it's just...
Usually one of your strengths.
Yeah, well, I think I've got a lot better the older I get. I've mellowed out a little bit.
Older I get in the...
At the ripe old age of early 30s.
No, we all get better. Like no one's perfect. But I think, it just makes me feel like, especially like you're too cool and like you're never too cool to care. Like that's the thing that I'm really like when I talk to our athletes now in the Country Vic men's program and whoever else I'm working with, it's like if you care, like that's the most important thing and that shows you don't really care. And like if I'm a coach, I'm not picking – sorry, I shouldn't say I wouldn't pick you, but that would be something I'd be like, are they going to fit?
You and someone else for the last spot, that might be something that –
You don't want to leave anything to chance.
Yeah.
Yep. No, I think that's valid. And I really like the point there, you know, you're never too cool to care. Because I think a lot of our players now, and I'm talking junior athletes more than senior athletes, live in this, if I don't care, then, you know, I can't actually be hurt by anything. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't worry me when this happens because I haven't really invested anything on this or I don't care enough about this for it to be a problem. It's like, no, caring is awesome. Like you care about something, that is the best thing that you can do in a team.
I saw a senior athlete yesterday who is a little bit older than me, I'm pretty sure, plays in the NBL. He jumped over a like a seat to try and save a ball in a 3-on-2 drill. Like
it's a fine line between caring and craziness.
But this is the thing.
Sure, the coaching staff have had their heart in their throats.
Yeah, they would, but you think about this, like he cares. Like that's why he's still at that level and performing the way he does because he cares about it. But then I think it's just a really important thing is like take care of the things you can control and like the rest will take care of itself if you work on your game. But yeah, we all just – I agree. Everyone thinks it's not cool to care.
Yeah, I think it's the best. Like give me a kid that cares. Like you can conquer the world with a kid that cares. Like Matthew Deller, though, is probably a fairly good example.
Yep.
Like has – I would absolutely suggest has maxed out his – playing ability. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think he's going to get better at ball handling, shooting. Certainly don't think he can get better defensively now than where he has been. But he cares more than nearly anybody else that you see on the floor. Like, the way he does things off the floor, the way he does things on the floor, like, the guy cares.
Richard Jefferson spoke about it the other day. He's like, they had their whatever.
That podcast should be out now, actually.
Yeah, like, and they're talking about, like, this guy's jacked. He's, like, however old. Yeah. We're all here having, like, a nice night out between each other.
Yep.
And then they're like, oh, he's in the morning running.
Yeah.
And he's jacked. Like, they're like, he's 35. We're here. We're, like, we've retired. But this guy's still working hard all the time because he cares.
Well, it's respectable.
Yeah.
Like, people recognize that stuff. Much like people would recognize when someone runs off the court, gives them five on the way through as they're entering. Mm-hmm. I think it's a really big thing, and it's I don't know if there is, a better way to fix it than just highlighting it. Mm-hmm. Like, and every now and again, it might be film where it's like, hey, just look at your body language here. Like, is this the body language of someone you'd want to play with? And just highlighting it that way and just making them be aware of it. You know, I hate to go down the path of you need to have a rule where you've got to give five to the person coming off and on and all those sorts of things just to make sure they get there quickly. But maybe that is the sacrifice you have to make for a little bit. To just really enforce, hey, they're not coming on until you get off, so you better get here quickly in that sort of space. But again, I think it's a good look overall. It's like the singlets tucked into shorts. Like, cool. It's not for me. Like, I don't really care about it. Does it look tidier? You know, yes, it probably looks tidier, but that's not one of the things that I care about. But I do care about that, is in running off the court. So, again, just one of those things. On-ball screens on the wing. Not taking away the baseline drive. That is something I very much care about, but I know Zoe absolutely cares about this.
Caveat.
Oh, okay.
Because...
lost a lot of the fun.
Well, no, because not taking away the baseline drive when you're in a coverage that forces over. Like, if you're in ice...
So if you're in ice, I get that.
Then not sending it away from the screen is just as annoying.
The counter. Like, it's the other side.
Yeah, but... yeah, it's I actually think this might have been born out of the adjustment from forced sideline to neutral stance, because whilst forced sideline would mean sending him away from the screen, there was a bit of a comfortability with forcing them away a certain way, whereas now we're like, don't force them anyway. You're in a neutral stance, stay in front. Like, and so maybe that's taken away that feeling of, oh, I can force them there. Also, I think people just don't want to have to get over the top of the screen.
It's easy to just hit the screen and go, switch.
Or let them go baseline.
Yeah.
but, yeah, I think... Also got to give some leeway, I guess, to the defender of very often the screen's being called as it's set.
Mm-hmm.
So that's – so you're getting hit and then the having to adjust, and in that time the offense is attacked and is on the rim. So making sure that like if you're going to – you have someone reject – you're going to, speak to the defender about it, just make sure those other things were in place. Like, was it communicated early, loud, often? And if so, you know, the first question I would ask them is, did you hear that? And if the answer is yes, well, now we need to talk about why you didn't do that. If the answer is no, then it's, okay, well, I heard it from the sideline. What can we do? What do we need to do? Do we need to say it multiple times, or, you know, and then, yeah, go from there. So, I think one thing to get buy-in and to get adjustment, we have to see the whole picture of that. And whilst sometimes we just see the reject and then we fire up.
Yep. It's genuinely a thing, because I know offensively – any wing catch where there's an on-ball, I would be telling my player, go away from the on-ball screen straight away. Like, test baseline straight off the bat and see if you can just get something before the on-ball screen gets there in the first place. And it's, I think that's the tidiest thing you can do as a defender, is like, well, we're going to send it one way and one way only, and we know where that's going in that space. Like, I just think that's a little bit cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
But the amount of, I'll say guards and wings because they tend to be the ones guarding the ball on that wing catch for argument's sake. Yeah. They just get super nervous about changing their stance from neutral stance to toes to half court to send over the top. They get real nervous about that. Mm. I understand why. Like, yeah. But again, you do that and let us deal with the rest of it that comes from that if they go and split you through the middle because
the bigs jumped out too high or they're not there at all or whatever. And that's the hard part is creating that buy-in in each other that, you know, I'm going to do my job and you know that the person next to you is going to do theirs.
Yep. How does that go? Like, do you talk to the offense about, hey, I don't think they're going to do this. Like, they're not going to take away baseline. Like, would you load the gun a little bit and just say, hey, rip against this and see how it goes?
All the time.
Yeah.
That's literally the first thing I say to him now. Yep. It's like the biggest thing too is just being comfortable that every screen coverage has a weakness. I think that's the other thing. We try and stop everything and you can't. Like, if we're in a drop and over, obviously we might give up a snake dribble, we might give up a wombat into like a Gortat, but like there's a reason like we're trying to force a mid-range jump shot. We're trying to make the ball handler take that contested shot off the bounce. But then it's like a jam and under. If we do that, it's the same thing. But you're still forcing them into the screen. So I think we need to teach that better too. Like I haven't done a good job of that in the past, and it's something we spend time on now is like, how do I actually get over a screen and how do we be in that situation? And like, you can't stop everything.
Yep.
But the one thing we can't allow is a reject. Like, because if we're going to be directional and push it into the screen, like, if we reject, we're done. Like, they're going to score every single time we're in a rotation. We're not in a good – but then if we're icing, it's a completely different story. Like, we have to force it that way. So just clarity on that, I think we miss on how we actually do it.
Yep.
And being comfortable with what are we allowing out of this.
Yep. And I suppose that's part of the coaching battle as well. Like, is there a need to have a hard show and a trap in your arsenal? Like, for mine, probably the same thing. Like, if you get one, you're probably getting the other anyway. So do you need to teach both? I probably wouldn't. I'm not a big fan of hard show, personally. Like, it's just not for me. I'm a big believer in icing it down to a corner and those sorts of things, and I'm a big fan of trapping it. Like, it's cool. I'm okay with that because I kind of feel like they're both ends of the spectrum.
Yep.
Like, both of them are different coverages for different scenarios depending on who's involved in that. You do have to be a little bit careful about having to try and find this fix-all for everything.
Yes.
And not everything works for everyone in personnel. Like, switching, of course, that's universal. Like, if I see one more time a player just I've just run into the screen, switch. And it's like, you didn't fight overly hard to get over the top of that thing. You're just taking the lazy option. But that does tend to work. Like, switching does tend to be fairly universal, I find.
I do think switching's something we have to teach our kids, though.
I agree.
Because bigs need to be able to stay in front for two or three dribbles and be comfortable doing that. How many times you see the switch happen and the big is like in the charge circle because they don't want to get beaten. It's like, no, you've got to stay in front of that. Yep. The guards have got to figure out that, you know what, you can get away with absolute murder in the paint, smashing the big, like, go do it. Like, you know, how are you going to try and keep that big from rolling on the rim or finding their seal on you? You know, then that opens you up to things like three-way switching and all that sort of stuff. So I actually think there needs to be exposure to everything because not from a coverage perspective. I mean, coverage perspective is important because who knows where they go to with their basketball, what they're going to run. But more so from a decision-making perspective from the offense. So, you know, like, because I don't actually say go baseline. I'll say basketball overrides or make the basketball decision because I want them to start reading that stuff without and they know that the drill means nothing. The drill is never above the basketball decision. So, and if that's the case, if I'm really trying to rep something specific and they make a basketball decision, I'll say, hey, that is exactly right, just for this one, mate. Can you come over the on-ball or something like that?
Yep.
But it's, I think, showing them those different coverages, I think, is really important offensively or as important offensively as it is defensively about how to attack, how to find those weaknesses and how to be effective. Because I tend to stay away from trapping from in a game perspective because it becomes really predictable by the end of it. And I believe after a while, like it's a shock in the beginning and then you can pick it apart. I like to use it as just a bit of a change up or something to have a bit of a crack. But I also see a lot of teams stay in press in trapping because they're simply bigger. Like, and it's not out of I'm trying to work on this element of anything. It's just we're bigger and we're going to bully this team and we're going to win by 150. Like, I've got no issue with you trying to win. Go and try and win. But if you're up 20, try something else. Like, make your kids better. Try switching. Try a hard show. Try a drops coverage. Try ice. Like, no, don't try ice.
We need... We do need to come up with a different name.
We need a better name for that.
Down.
Yeah, down. I like down.
Try down.
Yep.
You know, one of the things with my 18s in my second last season of coaching under 18 girls, there were two teams that us and Bulleen were the two main teams and Melbourne was in the mix. And every other game, you know, the three of us, unless we played each other, we were winning by or potentially winning by 50 and 60. And I knew we would need the ice coverage if we were to make it to the grand final against either of those other two teams. So we only won games by like 20. But by the time we hit the final, we had that coverage that we were able to execute. So that they're the sort of things I think that are really important when you're thinking about, you know, what sort of coverage to use, etc. It's actually taken a really long walk from rejecting the on-ball screen. But anyway.
Yeah, I think just on this topic, a clinic to watch is actually Steve Clifford, who coached the Charlotte Hornets. Mm-hmm. He did a clinic in Serbia. It's on YouTube. Watch it. He talks about how they trap the ball screen, talking about guys like Luka Doncic and that. One of the best clinics I've ever watched because the way he explained it, like, why are we trapping this person and, like, how the detail, like, he talks about we want to get the ball out of someone's hands.
Yep.
They're not allowed to score out of the roller and they can't score off the first pass. And he breaks that down on how he does that. And I think that's a really good way, like, if you really want to look at, like, deep diving into a coverage, that's a really good resource to look at.
Like it. Really nice. One thing I don't like, zone defense being played in the younger age groups. And we keep saying it and it keeps happening. So, Brenton, continue was to why zone defense should not be played in the youth age groups.
Well, I think the biggest thing with this is that it hides a lot of the deficiencies and means that we're not actually – it's okay to not be good at something, but it's not okay not to work on it. I think that's the biggest thing. Like, I've been guilty of it. Like, I've been to a Nationals where I played zone.
Yep.
And I junked it up. But we also spent a lot of time on how we guarded one-on-one in a zone, which was different to, like, what you see most of the time. So I think being able to guard one-on-one, how to play off the ball, how to communicate is really important no matter what defense you do. And I think we try and hide too many deficiencies by just, okay, we're just going to sit in the paint because no one can shoot yet and we're bigger. We're just going to let it happen.
Yep. That is the biggest issue, I think, because – you know, I'm not anti-zones being played. Like, I'm actually quite pro-zones being played for a variety of reasons, and variety being one of them, in all honesty. Yeah, players need to see what that looks like in that space. But I do find at that level, like the younger age groups, when I'm saying younger age groups, 8s, 10s, 12s, a little bit of 14s. Like, I can live with a little bit of zone in 14s, especially with how big some of the kids are now. They can probably play
like against top-end 14s. Top-end 14s, I think.
Yeah,
back end of the season, after the split.
Yep.
I think.
Oh, from that perspective, I'm talking all the way down to domestic as well and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, like that's what I'm meaning when I say top age.
Yep.
Like that. Yep. Top end, sorry.
Yep. So I do think there needs to be something in there, but it can't be the default setting of, oh, well, nothing else is working, we'll just go to a zone. And, I mean, we see it a lot, even in the older age groups. Like, we look at senior basketball as well. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, okay, it's they've gone on a 6-0 run, timeout, zone's coming. Like, we all know that's going to be the change-up. And, look, there are times where it's probably a perfectly valid change-up, but I think it's being overused at the moment. And I get the whole thing. It works. Yeah, it does work. You are correct. Like, that will win you enough games, I think, zoning. But are your players coming out of it any better? Like, and I would suggest probably not in the most cases. Like, what they really need to do is find a way, Like, are you being scored on because you've taken three bad shots and it's been a layup fest down the other end? In which case, zone's not fixing that problem. Are you being scored on because your rotations haven't been sharp? Well, okay, zone will fix part of that problem, but the problem still exists. Like, until you fix the actual problem, zone's just a band-aid, I think, on that. And that's probably my fear with it, is that it's being used as more and more of a staple rather than a band-aid. And part of it's like, I still remember, I think it was the 1993 North Melbourne Giants. It was on the Brett Brown coach where they won the title. I think 93. It might have been 94.
My brother was in that team.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
The better car?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Well, he lives in a bigger house than me, so.
Yeah. I might be partly responsible for that, but it was that team played a lot of zone. Like they played a lot of 2-3 zone in there as well, and it kind of became the vogue thing for a little while there, and then it went away, and, you know, it ebbs and flows and all that sort of stuff. I worry that we're coming into an era where there's going to be a lot of zone being played rather than that match-up accountability. And I'm all for the junk, and I'm all for try different things and all that sort of stuff, but it's the we're just going to sit in this and wait for you to miss shots. They're the zones I worry about the most, because I just don't think that's helpful for either team. Like, that's, you're not really testing the offense, and defensively you're just hiding, I feel like, in that space. So that's one for me that I would I feel like we keep telling coaches, please don't do it, and they just keep doing it anyway. So it's there's a good chunk that keep doing it that won't change.
It needs to be definitely reiterated. It's not anti-zone. It is, like, if you're a coach that's using a zone as, like, a little change-up,
cool.
Like, great. Like, that's also, that's coaching. Like, and it's great for the kids to have to go, oh, hang on a second, this isn't match-up anymore, and adjust to that. And so I think that's fantastic. It's the, you know, 38 of 40 minutes. You know, you've gone down 10 in the first couple of minutes, so we sit in a zone for the rest of the game. It's that, because it's again, it's outcome focused rather than process. Like, there were times we probably in Korea could have zoned, and it might have saved us a little bit. Maybe, I mean, they shot the ball so well, probably not. But, you know, but in terms of getting coverage across and getting hands to those shooters, we might have been a bit better off. But how do we get – what's a – no one's even going to know by the end of December who won that tournament, especially here. Like, so how's that going to help us? Like, and we were then able to see the – even just over across that two-week period, the evolution of those kids and how they were able to, you know, go from, oh, that's a definite blow-by to, well, I'm contesting it now – to I'm staying in front. Like, that's really cool. Like, that's what we should be hanging our hat on.
Starting to dabble into a different podcast here, Zoe, which is planned for you and DP when
apologies.
He gets back from China.
Apologies.
But that's okay. We'll get to that at some stage. But
in a shocking development. I've gone off on a tangent.
Yes, unlike you at
Where's
all.
Where's Mihai?
Oh, very much on paternity leave. Oh, congratulations to Nick Mihai as well. Had his daughter a couple of weeks ago. Probably should mention something about that on the podcast. But
probably.
He has said he's got a new top five thing not to say during birth, which I'm looking forward to when he comes back on that
okay,
one.
Okay, that sounds interesting.
Yeah. Like, one of them last time was don't ask your wife if she can get up so you can lay on the bed.
That's self-explanatory.
I would have thought. But well, yeah, that was on his top five.
Well
yeah, it was explained.
Well done, Nick.
Yeah.
He's always got a new top five.
Yeah, it's you'd think he'd learn after the first time. Apparently not. All right, so the next one we keep talking about and we just keep going over and over. Stop going the refs. Like, I get that it's frustrating at times. I understand that not everyone's going to be on the same page. I understand all of those things, but it's genuinely unhelpful. Like, it is one of those areas where if a 50-50 call is there to be had and you can give it to the person that's been yelling at you all game or the person that hasn't, who do you think probably ends up with that one? Probably the person that hasn't. Like, it's an easy thing to say. And look, I actively haven't coached a game in about 5 years, so it's very easy to sit from my ivory tower up here and say that you should all just lay off the refs. But it is genuinely a thing where I do look at some of the behaviour of not just our coaches but also our players. It's like, do not stand for that behaviour. Like, if you see a player going an official, get them out of there as soon as possible and rectify it, because that is not the behaviour we want exhibited throughout the sport. Like, refs are trying as hard as they possibly can as well. it's one of those things where we do want to leave the sport in a better spot, and just continually going referees on that is not helpful. It just looks bad. In particular, I was at a game maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago where I was watching a coach that was into the refs on everything, and it's like, but you're wrong. Like, you've got the rule wrong. Like, you're arguing something, but you're the one that's in the wrong here. And was talking to the coach after the game, and they wanted to argue with me about it. I'm like, look, I have no skin in this game. I was just telling you that the rule you thought was the rule is not the rule. Like, you're just actively wrong on this, but didn't want to hear it either. So I think from a what we want the game to look like perspective, please lay off the referees. Like, it's, again, easier said than done at times. You all get caught and all those sorts of things, but it's not helpful for anyone involved. And Brenton, I know you keep to a high standard, in particular with what you expect from your coaches as well. And it's like the first thing you tell them is stay off the refs.
Yeah, I'm guilty of it. We all are, because we're all competitive people. We all like expect a high standard from everybody. But like, I think something that I did my last 2 years when I coached the state teams was I didn't talk to them.
Yep.
I legitimately just said there is no point. I will have a conversation.
Yep.
But I'm not arguing things. Like, I'm just going to try and impact the game how I can, and getting into the refs isn't impacting the game at all. If anything, it's taking my focus off what's most important, which is what's happening in the game and the athletes and everyone involved. So I think I try to explain it to people too. Like, if I miss a shot, I can't get into them about missing a shot. So the referees are the same. Like, they're going to make mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes. It's like, I think, and anyone thinking that a referee is deliberately making mistakes is wrong. Like, no one goes out there to try and do that. Like, everyone's getting better, as long as we can get better from it. And, like, it's okay. There's going to be heat of the moment where you're going to get into them sometimes. But you've got to be really, like, I think the last time I got a technical foul was in an NBL 1 game. I deserved it because I let my emotions get the better of me. But I went and apologised to the ref after. And that's something I think we need to be more self-aware. We need to be more, like, accountable to our actions and hold ourselves to a higher standard when it comes to that. Like, it's just no point. It doesn't impact the game, so why are we worried about it?
At the risk of dabbling into yet another podcast, we managed to navigate career where we had multiple 14-1 foul counts in a quarter without getting a tech. So,
oh, yeah, I remember that when I was at a tournament internationally. No,
you know what? I'll take that.
Zoe's about to undo everything we've just spoken about here, Brenton. Yes,
only travels for the tournament were called on us. Crazy. Crazy.
Yep.
And still didn't get teched. So.
No, true.
I remember having an official stare at me when I was overseas, waiting for me to say something. And any time my mouth would move, I could see his hands about to move. I'm like, oh, I better not say anything right now. I might get thrown out of the game. I hadn't said anything the whole game. But it just happens. You got to read the room with that too.
Absolutely. Not a wise thing to try going the officials in a different country, yes. I would suggest. All right, so the next one. Child safety. Like, I feel like we discussed this a lot on the podcast already, and it's going nowhere. Like, we have to be really mindful. Jump in.
Oh, I don't think it's going nowhere. I think our good coaches are really taking it. Oh, sorry, going nowhere as in, like, it's not leaving.
No, that's what I'm talking about.
I thought
meant
as in we're not making any
there's been headway.
Any headway. No. And I was like, that's a bit unfair.
There's absolutely been, coaches are trying to navigate a different spot. What I'm saying is the rules around child safety are going nowhere. Yeah. Poorly phrased by my poor vocab on that one. But the rules around it are going nowhere. That's the reality. We want to make sure that the basketball is a safe environment for everyone that wants to be involved to be involved. And yes, coaching has evolved. Players have evolved. I had this chat with a coach the other day, and they were telling me, players have changed. You know, they're not the same as they used to be. I'm like, no, they're not. Why are you trying to be the same as you used to be 25 years ago when you were coaching? You need to evolve with this. It's almost like we sat there and said, oh, how it used to be was wrong, so we've pivoted, but now we resent the players for growing up in a different era where, you know, they didn't have it as hard as what we used to have it. No, because it wasn't a great era. It wasn't an overly safe space to be in at times for a lot of our kids. We want to create an environment where they do want to be here. They do want to be happy. they do want to learn and test themselves. And if all they do is live in this world of fear of being yelled at or you know, manhandled by someone or anything like that, well, that's not the environment we want to create. So we have to be really careful about what our actions look like, because one, we're always being filmed. Like, whether we're aware of it or not, like the amount of stadiums that have either CCTV or just cameras in general, you are pretty much guaranteed to be on camera 95% of the time. And that's just without the mobile phones that people might use at that point in time as well. It's going nowhere. We need to adjust and we need to be better as coaches. And yes, I think it is going in the right direction for sure. Coaches are far more aware of it than they used to be. So credit to everyone in that space. But don't sit there and think, oh, I'll just adjust for this 6-month period and then I'll just go back to what it was, because that is not the adjustment we need to see. We need to see ongoing, continual adjustment in what that looks like. So the physical contact, the tone of voice, the language that's used, all of those things start to come into it. And I would recommend, as always, mic yourself up and listen to it back. And how do you sound? What does the tone sound like? If we can't see, because the language around it is really interesting. I think when you get a big picture of, you can see what it looks like on video and you can hear it, you probably get more context. Mm. But when you can only hear, you really dial into, what does the coach mean when they say this? How are they really implying what this is going to look like? Those sorts of things. That's a really fascinating one. So I would always recommend coaches mic themselves up in that space.
Well, and I mean, we just saw an example of, you said one thing and I took it the wrong way. Both could have been taken, like what you said meant, you said what you meant.
Brenton sat back and laughed also, the entire time as we were going at it.
No, but then it was also like, you know, I wasn't wrong in how I took it as well. So that you pick up on those things where it's like, that's a language thing that I need to fix. Because I think sometimes we get caught as coaches. I definitely did early. I always thought it was their fault. Like, I was like, why can't they understand me? Yep. And it's like, well, that's actually on me. Like, if they can't understand me, that's my fault.
Have you ever seen that video of the dad with his young child, and they've got like a little T-ball set up,
and he puts his eye on it?
He's like, you know, keep your eye on the ball, keep your eye on, and the kid literally goes and puts his eye on the ball. One of my favorite videos ever. But it's like, that's what we're talking
about. Yeah,
like,
that's what I mean. So like, how you're saying one thing may not be being received in a way. And so if you hear it and can look back on it, then and away from the moment as well, then you can sort of go, oh, I can see where they're coming from. From there.
And it really is, if you're unsure as to how you're being perceived, ask your players, because your players will happily give it up. Like, they will gladly tell you, it's like, hey, didn't like this. Like, this wasn't great. Can you adjust that?
Perception's everything. Like, really, that's the thing. Like, you can see, like you just said, Zoe, like, you might think it's right. If it just matters how it's perceived by them. Like, like being in a school environment, like, that's something you learn really quickly in a classroom, is like, is what I'm saying what they're hearing? And the only way you're ever going to find that is being reflective and actually listening to what other people have to say. And I think as coaches, we just want to solve the problem all the time without actually listening to what the problem actually is. And like, getting back to this child safety question, is like, it's our job to be a part of that. Like, it's our job. Like, we can't, whatever we think about it, like, we all want to put people in a safe environment. We want to support these young athletes that we're coaching. It's our job to make sure that happens.
So we'll model the behaviour.
But also, child safety is there to protect you as a coach too.
Yes, for sure.
So it's not like, of course, the athlete is the most important, but it's there to make sure that you are, there are boundaries in place that mean you could never be accused of anything, you know, untoward or unacceptable, and that in turn protects you.
Absolutely.
So it's something we should all embrace. And I know there's times, I mean, there's times like, you know, where I'd like, if I could just move you here, like this 2 centimeters here. But no, but I've found myself having, becoming a better communicator, because I have to be specific, because I can't do that, you know? So it's, you know, I know at times it can be a bit frustrating, but at the end of the day, it's there to protect you.
Well, and this, you know, as much as we're being a little bit tongue-in-cheek with Groundhog Day and we keep going over the same things, this is one that's not going anywhere and it shouldn't.
No, it's not.
Like, it will always remain.
Like the on-ball screen.
Really is. Really is. The next one, trying to speed up your development as a player or as a coach. Oh, Zoe's gone the deep exhale. Brenton's leant forward on his chair with a massive smile on his face. Off you go, Brenton. You can take this away.
So I've been talking to a, I would say a mentor of mine who is, he's worked all around the world. He's worked with some really, really good players. And he has been literally saying the same thing to me. Like, if you expect to fix this in one block, Brenton, you're dreaming. Like, he's like, it's all about, he talks about fishing. If you want to be a good coach, you got to be a good fisher, because like, you got to go out there. If you like fishing and go out there and can be patient and wait for it, that's what coaching is. You've got to wait to catch the fish. Like, you've got to keep them going and going and going. And if you don't have patience, it's never going to work, because it doesn't happen overnight.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. Patience.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an interesting analogy, actually, when you sort of think about it, because you need the right environment.
Yep.
You need the right tools.
Yep.
You need to sit there and be disappointed plenty of times.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's kind of the same thing that our players and our coaches go through. Like, yes. It's, I didn't get the job. Okay, well, what's your reaction to that? Like, where are the shortcomings? What could you have fixed? What could you have done differently? Where are the areas for development? You can't cheat the reps of actual coaching. Yep. And there are times where you might nail the interview, but we've also seen you coach and it's like, hey, you're just not the right fit.
Or even vice versa.
Yeah, absolutely. It happens regularly in that space.
I just remember every session he's come up to me, he's like, Brenton, we're going fishing.
Yep.
I'm just like, okay. And it's a really good way to think about it. Yeah, I've never really thought about it that way till now. And it's like, it is, isn't it? Like, if we keep trying to speed this stuff up, like, how long does it take for, like, some, I've looked at some athletes that have grown so much and they were really good shooters, and then 6 months later can't hit the ring.
Yeah.
It's it's like, I don't, patience is everything.
Yep. I don't disagree with that. And it's, and it flows down, I think, to players, mm-hmm. where players are always searching for feedback. Like, they always want notes on, and, you know, what could I have done better and all that sort of stuff. And it's like, well, hang on, we haven't fixed the stuff that we've spoken about for the last 3 weeks yet, mm-hmm. and you're looking for something else. Like, it's great to always be searching for more, but you got to action something in there as well. And it's like, remember 3 weeks ago when we said you need to use your left hand more? Well, we still haven't fixed that. So what more do you want in this space? But again, that will take time. Yep. So if we've discussed, hey, you still haven't used your left hand, okay, well, what plan is in place for you to use your left hand? Are you doing some extra work in your own time? Are you at lunchtime, you know, sitting there on the bump bag making left-hand finishes? Like, what have you put in place for this? You can't speed something up just because you want it now.
Mm-hmm.
You can speed it up by doing more work, like that. You can accelerate your development, I feel like, in that space, but you're not going to speed it up by just wanting it more. I think that's the challenge, is because we are in a generation of, we want things now. And that is not unique to our players. That is also our coaches and just how we are. You know, if we want to watch a movie, we can stream it. Like, whereas we used to have to try and go down to Video Easy, hope that nobody else had rented it out, and then we could get the $3.99 for a
weekend.
Bit
off topic here. Don't we all miss going to Video Easy?
I do.
I remember getting my PlayStation games.
We actually spoke about this on
there.
Saturday.
Yeah, we were.
Oh, it used to be the best. Go there. I'm going to go get a PlayStation game and play for a week.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I'll take it back.
Absolutely.
Oh, those were the days.
Yeah, happier times. Yep. Like, it's, you know, but, you know, we are where we are.
Yes.
You know, every now and again, you do want to stream something and life is easier. But it is one of those things where you can't speed up that development. You have to put the reps in. And, you know, if you try and speed it up by not doing the work, it'll break. Like, part of doing the work is creating that base and that structure where you can fall back onto it if you need to. If something doesn't go right, well, you know how to deal with this because you've been in this situation before. And that's coaching or playing, I think. Whereas if you've just tried to gloss through all of that, you won't know how to deal with that situation when it comes about. Whether that's whether you take the right shot or whether you call the timeout at that point in time. You know, they're both the same thing, really. So, yeah, stop trying to speed up your development without doing the work. Like, if you do the work, your development will get sped up inherently. That's part of it. But don't try and do it without. For mine, like, that's one of my things.
I think the thing for coaches is also, and players, timing matters.
Yep.
You know, like, there's times where, like, we're just going through state team interviews and appointments at the moment, and I'm in a position, it's great and it's awful at the same time, where some good coaches are going to miss out. So it's great because finally, like, we're now in a position where we've got competition for these jobs.
I was going to say, because 5 years ago, this wasn't a thing.
No.
Like, it's
my first year in this role, we had a total of 7 applicants for all, and only one of them was a head coach. But now we're, you know, like we've got heaps of applicants and great ones missing out, and so this is where we want to be, right? Because we want athletes to compete, and it's a similar thing with coaches. But it's also really important, I think, you know, I've had a good coach miss out on a position and caught up with her and set a development plan for her. And now it's on her. Now it's on her to decide whether she wants to do it and go through it and see where it comes out. But this is the culture, you know, like, yeah, I've missed out. It's okay to be disappointed. It's not okay to be angry or rude toward the people that are giving the – because there's a lot that goes into it, and sometimes timing is it. You know, like with our state team appointments, head coaches are generally three-year appointments. So if you want it on year two of of their appointment, you're not going to get it. Like, and so it's, you know – these sort of things are they need to be taken into place. Similar with athletes. If you are the fourth best point guard in your age group, there's a big chance you're not going to get picked for things, because rarely a team's going to take four point guards. Like, they'll take maybe three and then like some tweeners, and
yeah, they're more likely to take four centers than they are four point guards.
Yeah. Like, so realistic. It's like, but that's the timing. Now, does that mean your career is over? No, like, you can work on other things and find yourself a point of difference, so you become, you know, one of those point guards. But, you know, it's there's so much that goes into it, and like I love that fishing analogy. One I've been using with the kids is that they're popcorn, and so you put popcorn in the microwave all the same when they start, in the exact same environment, but they pop at different times. So some might be early, some might not at all.
Yep.
Like, some, you know, right before the buzzer goes off, or, you know, whatever.
Some need Maltesers or M&Ms to make them just that little bit nicer.
A bit of butter. Yeah. But
going down the video easy path, I guess. Yes.
But this is what I mean. Like, things take time. It's like anything. You know, if you're expecting to go from even just a, you know, a VC first team and walk straight into head coaching a state team, for example, it's probably not going to happen.
No, it wouldn't for a player either. Like, correct. Most of them don't go from playing VC into a state team. Like, there's only 12 spots.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't happen.
But it's not going to happen, and work has to come with it. Much like when you're a baby, you don't go from immobile to running. Like, there's steps in between, and you can't skip it. Now, there'll be some somewhere. Someone's going to say, oh, my cousin's friend's nephew's auntie went straight from sitting to walking. Great. More often than not, you can't skip those steps of you can't move, then you roll over, then you sort of push up onto on all fours, then you start crawling, then you stand. Then you stand without holding onto something. Then you start walking. Then you start running. Like, you can't skip those steps. And it is exactly the same when you talk about coaching. And you may get away with it, but it will always be found out somewhere. And the step that is often skipped is like scouting and coding and things like that, being able to clip games and present video packages that will get found out.
Cool. All right, last one, which ties into a Rob's rant.
Yes.
It's Rob's rant. He's on the mic complaining about stuff he just don't like, from bad parking to soggy chips. Rob's rants on Talking Split.
The end that I like the most on that, I think. So my Rob's rants this week is the generic AI content. It is frustratingly poor. Like it is, I'm all for using AI to help with everyday tasks, to take away the menial stuff, to take away the things that, you know, are just time.
Create a template.
Yeah, those are, like, yeah. No issues with that sort of stuff. Like that's quite okay. I'm good with that. But the continual, here's what I believe in as a coach, you know, enter me a prompt for like 15 things that people would really like, no, I'm not up for that. It all looks the same. It all looks generic. I read it and it's like, that's not you. Like if you want to put in your information and have it tidied up, I'm actually okay with that. That I've got zero problems with that. Be a little bit more creative around the font we're using, around the design template. Try and reduce the amount of words that are on there, because everything I find that is AI produced has got like 1,000 words on it with one generic picture. It looks horrible.
That hyphen?
Yeah, that sort of stuff
as
well.
The really long, like, I don't know what it's called, but yeah, it's not a normal length hyphen. It's really long.
It's awful. Like it is one of those things look, don't get me wrong, old man yells at a cloud. Like that's kind of what this segment is in the first place. But, you know, I am so anti-AI for that stuff. It's not funny. I'm okay with it making your life easier in certain capacities, but the creative side of things, that's the stuff where you get to be creative. If you just put prompts into a computer, that's not being creative. That's asking somebody else to do the work for you. Just please, like, use it for what it's supposed to be used for. I'm cool with that. But don't think that you've now solved world peace and hunger and created basketball because you're able to enter an AI prompt. It's very different. We don't coach via AI. That is not how this works. I heard a story not too long ago about a coach that asked their AI agent at halftime of a game, what should I say to my players given this is the score and this is the situation?
Whoa.
You've got to be kidding. Like, absolutely not. Like, that is a disastrously poor idea to go down the path of. There's no context. There's no understanding. They don't understand. Like, for so many reasons, that's a bad idea. Please use it for the right stuff. That is not the right stuff.
Did you see the politician in the States that read out
his prompt by accident?
Prompt by accident. Mm. Like, so he read whatever it was and then he's like, here's another version of doesn't sound like a Senate or something like that. Hilarious. Yeah. Need more of that.
Not a great example of how to use it, but, you know, please be careful of what that looks like. You know, I can tell you from the coach ed perspective, we are putting out nothing that is AI. Like, it is all generated via experience that we've had to be able to use for people that is tangible, evidence-based. Do we run some fact-check stuff? Yes, of course. We use it for what it's supposed to be used for, but not creating the output in that space. To be fair, you could probably create your own podcast with the amount of times we've been on this now.
True.
Using our own voices.
Oh, that's scary.
Yeah, it's a little alarming, but that's okay. We're into the social split talk for this one as we start to wind up.
Something to post on Facebook. Let's go.
It's like me on Twitter.
This one from Rob Dial. Just caught this one on TikTok the other day as I was scrolling through some stuff. Interesting perspective.
The most dangerous form of blindness is believing that your perspective is the only reality. And man, that is the problem with the world right now, is that everybody thinks they're right. Everyone is so locked into their own perspective that they are unwilling to even consider another point of view, especially if it challenges their core beliefs. See, someone else's experience doesn't erase yours, but we can only grow as people when we stop needing to be right and start trying to understand each other. Because the most dangerous thing that you can do in life is stop listening to someone else because you think that you already know everything.
Pretty similar to what we've already spoken about a number of times on this podcast in particular. Listen to everyone. Like, not everything will be for you. It doesn't have to be. That's okay too. But listen to everyone. Try and find different perspectives. Try and find different ways to do things. Stretch yourself where you need to stretch yourself. Like, I really like the messaging behind that. You're not always right. And similar to the Zoe and I discussion about it's going nowhere. Mm. Like, same deal. Context matters. Yep. And that's the kind of thinking I think we need to sort of go down in particular with our coaching. But that does wrap us up for this week, the part two episode. Brenton, Zoe, thank you very much for jumping in.
Thank you.
We'll catch you guys again in the future. And thanks, coaches, for listening. We'll see everyone next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.